As we all probably know by now, Einstein's main objective with his relativity theories, and I stress the word theories, was to eliminate the well-known and documented idea that there was a substance, the ether, that permeated everything and everyone on this earth and was pivotal in trying to explain the true nature of our reality. This was obviously not what the elite controllers wanted, as the ether was, and still is, absolutely free to access if one has the right equipment. By the way, the word equipment also includes you, yourself. But what is the ether? Let's look at its definition in Wikileaks' Believe It or Not. According to ancient and medieval science, ether was also called quintessence, meaning the fifth element, and is the material that fills the region of the universe above the terrestrial sphere. That's the Spaceballs definition. So since Einstein's nefarious Masonic ramblings were published in 1905, the idea of an ether has been relegated to the dark and dusty corner of historical failed research and subsequently intentionally forgotten and suppressed. Or was it? By no coincidence, the plane or planet we live on is named Earth, an anagram for ether. Now, why would the ancients find it so important to name the place we live on after something that doesn't exist? Did you know that AOL, America Online's precursor to Messenger, was called AIMNA, A-I-M-N-A, which stands for Ether Intelligent Messaging Network Architecture, owned by Ether Systems Incorporated? Also strange to name a technology and company after something that doesn't exist. As we also know, they love to hide things in plain sight and actually tell us what they are doing in subtle ways. So let's take a look at the world's biggest internet company. Let's search for something on Google. That one is probably not a good example. There it is, right there. Right from Google's inception, this little nugget of information has been visible all the time on every search query. But what does it really mean? The second you hit the enter button on Google search, your query starts its long journey to Silicon Valley and back. From your computer, it is sent to your router or to the plug in the wall. From there, it passes through numerous ISPs, servers, and national backbone routes. Underneath the Atlantic Ocean through cables, through numerous servers again, and ends up at Google servers in Silicon Valley. It then sorts through the index of trillions of documents, finds millions of answers, collates them into order, bundles them into a package, and then sends it all the way back again, all in half a second. That's pretty impressive, but also pretty improbable. The whole 11,000-mile round trip for my search query would take half a second only if there was a single, uninterrupted cable from my house to Silicon Valley, which there obviously isn't. What most people think, as I did, is that the reason these searches come back so fast is because it is cached or saved already in your local area ISP server. In reality, that information has only been indexed by your local ISP. The same as your library card catalogue tells you where to find the book, not what's in it. One could argue that Google has national servers set up in all countries, therefore reducing the transmission times, but try searching for an independent small website with a local server from a country across the world from you. It still only takes a second or so to gain complete access. Considering the huge amount of hubs, switches, LANs, WANs, nodes, servers, gateways, ISPs, bridges, protocols, and thousands of miles of cable your search query goes through, half a second to traverse the entire world in any direction and back again is pretty incredible, and in my humble opinion, highly unlikely through a physical network. And what about Skype? Talking to someone halfway across the world in real time? Through all of those hubs and switches and oceanic cables? With little or no latency? How is this practically possible? Only NASA can magically overcome an 11-second latency when singing along with astronauts on the fake station. The fiber optic cables laid worldwide in the 1980s are allegedly the speed of light, but they need a booster every so often to stop deterioration of the signal. Even though NASA's Starlight travels trillions of miles dodging planets, galaxies, asteroid fields and comets, with no light vaccine booster shot required. Another little peculiarity is that the internet as we know it today started off in the 1970s. Back then it was called the Ethernet. Another one of those baffling coincidences. As is usual in our research, going back to the time of free-thinking, independent scientists will usually produce the answers that have been hidden by our corrupted scientific institutions. Back when free thought was cherished and not censored. We can find a plethora of old books, papers and studies on the luminiferous ether, all describing the elastic properties, the density, the speed, etc. But what about etherons? Huh? My sentiments exactly. To fully understand the etheron concept, then this book, which is linked in the description box, must be read and understood. A daunting task, I might add, but it does show us the speed of these little critters. 1.57 times the speed of light, which galaxy brain Einstein said was the fastest thing in the universe. Wrong again, bro. Now, the fantastic speeds of worldwide instant communication becomes a little clearer. Now, also, the concept of quantum physics becomes clearer as well. Two things can exist at two different places at the same time as they suggest. This theory never sat well with me, but if the time it took to move a signal through the ether was so infinitesimally small, then it would seem that they do indeed coexist. So now, our Google search query's 11,000-mile journey only takes 0.00001 of a second. Put a few local hubs, nodes and the cheap router you got from Aldi along the way, and we are now getting much closer to the half a second or so that they show us. So if we can transmit seamlessly and autonomously through the ether, then why all the networks and cables and stuff? Data harvesting and control. You didn't think they'd let us speak to each other in private, did you? The internet is just the tool that is used to access, utilize, and organize the ether. Etheric technology has been with us for decades and has been used by all the tech giants for extreme amounts of monetary gain. Have you ever known who was calling before you picked up the phone? Have you ever had that feeling that somebody close to you is in trouble? And what about the dog who always knows when it's time for walkies? Yes, the dog one has been scientifically studied. Dr. Rupert Sheldrake called this the morphic fields, or the science of morphogenetics, which we propose is nothing more than the luminiferous ether at work. Have a think about this. How many times has your cell phone call been cut off, or keeps breaking up, or just hangs up on its own when the signal becomes weak? How many times does this happen, even though you're just talking to your mate who lives 300 yards away from you? Yet in the background, you're streaming a high-definition, 4K movie with 6-channel Dolby audio on your computer with no glitches and in stunningly good quality. Your phone is using the cell towers we see dotted around. Your router, however, is reading and writing directly to the ether. The amount of data for a simple phone call is just a small fraction of the data transfer needed to stream a high-def movie in real time. So why is one so good and the other not so much? Two different systems. One using radio frequency technology and the physical network, the other just blatantly using the ether right under our noses. With the advent of app-based phone calls like Skype, WhatsApp, Viber, etc., we saw the gradual transfer of service from network-based communication to ether-based. Did you ever notice that when you do get a good connection on these apps, the quality is way better than the old phone calls? Sometimes it's as if the other person is in the next room. In essence, or quintessence, they are. If the tech giants know about this, then who else knows about it, and who else uses it? Ever wondered how the USGS can detect the epicenter of earthquakes out in the middle of nowhere? Or how about thousands of miles out into the ocean, with pinpoint accuracy? Where is this vast, all-encompassing network of Richter-scale sensors that can pick up small tremors at any point on our vast, flat, green Earth? And the mighty oceans. These events are being read directly from the ether with a technology that they've kept very, very tightly hidden from us. Back to good old Galaxy Brain and his main objective. Einstein was lauded as the greatest scientific mind ever, because he did exactly as he was told by his Masonic overlords and dismissed the very real ether in favor of his psychological gobbledygook theories. Much to the pleasure of the rich elite, who could now do as they've done with all of the Earth's rich and abundant free energy sources, they could sell it.